You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
It was not that long ago that paying more than a dollar for a liter at the pump occasioned angry grumblings from consumers. But in the midst of a climate crisis, we can no longer afford to ignore the true costs of producing the energy that we use to run our industries, fuel our cars, and pump our water. John Calvert is a professor at Simon Fraser University and the co-author of the new CCPA report, Climate Change and the Canadian Energy Sector. He joins us by phone this morning. Good morning, John.
Good morning.
Broadly speaking, what are the current trends in Canadian energy production?
We're very heavily reliant on fossil fuels and will continue to do so. And the composition of the fossil fuels, and I'm speaking primarily here of oil and gas, is changing to what many would see as dirtier forms of these particular types of fuel. We're looking at an increase in overall production over the next 10 to 15 years, and we're also seeing a big shift from conventional oil to oil that's produced from tar sands technology. About three-quarters of our oil, according to the NEB, will be from the tar sands by 2020, and this is a big change. So we're running out of conventional oil and increasingly having to develop our oil from arguably environmentally less benign ways of obtaining it. And the gas, on the gas side, we see this introduction of what's called fracking, hydraulic fracturing, and that too has become a major component of the gas sector and will become probably more than close to two-thirds of what we're actually receiving in terms of gas production in the coming years. So it's essentially more of the same, and this contradicts an impression that has been created that we're moving towards a renewable energy future where we are greening the energy sector and actually meeting our climate objectives, because our study shows that that's not happening, at least in Canada.
In terms of overall policy, what is guiding Canada's energy production?
Basically, to the extent that we have planning, the planning is entirely what the industry wants, and governments have been extremely accommodating to the demands of the oil and gas industry. But arguably, this is not a route to having either a greener or arguably a more labor-intensive energy sector. In fact, as you know, I'm sure the abandonment of the NEB way back in the 1980s set us on a course where basically governments are following whatever lead the industry suggests to them, and the idea that there should be rational national planning looking at our long-term future energy needs and trying to incorporate an industrial strategy with that. This whole approach has been abandoned, and so this is one of the major problems that we identify in our study, because the increasing reliance on fossil fuel extraction and dirtier fossil fuel extraction arguably is going in the wrong direction environmentally, and also we're not getting many jobs out of it. If you look at the energy sector, total employment is around 300,000 jobs in our overall economy, or roughly 2% of all the employment, despite the huge amount of capital investment that's being put into this sector. So this is not a great job creation area of the economy, despite the amount of investment, and we're not getting a lot of the jobs that we might also get. Again, the idea that the market should reign supreme has meant that there's been very little effort to trigger additional value-added manufacturing of components, or even on the processing side, to get more employment and more of the actual processing work in Canada. So we're exporting a lot of relatively raw bitumen, and we don't have an industrial strategy in terms of trying to ensure that Canadian manufacturers are producing the equipment that is needed for the oil extraction and other aspects of the energy sector. So we're not getting the jobs that we might get anyway.
So in terms of energy policy, it sounds like we're kind of like a ship without a captain right now.
Well, I mean, there is a captain in the sense that the captain is the industry, but it's not a government captain, and it's not a captain that's basically looking at what the long-term needs of Canada is.
There's been a lot of talk about the tar sands and the greenhouse gases. Can you put that into terms for us? How does our energy policy impact our environment?
Well, I guess to start out in a slightly different way, there has been a myth that we're moving significantly towards a greener energy future, and that is simply not happening. We're increasingly reliant on, quote, developing the tar sands, particularly in northern Alberta, and increasingly reliant on gas fracking as the sources of new energy in Canada. And we are running out of the more conventional energy that we had in the past. Also, Canada, unlike a number of other countries where, say, employment in extraction of energy has gone down somewhat, we're in a situation where actually employment is going up slightly and predicted to continue to go up because of the very significant expansion primarily of the tar sands. And the environmental consequences down the road of all this are going to be quite significant. It's not clear who's going to clean up the mess when it's left, and it's not clear that in the long term this whole strategy is environmentally responsible.
I know that from my understanding, we send a lot of our tar sands oil down to the United States. I know there's a big pipeline controversy down there right now. Are we at least managing our energy exports well?
Well, we took away our toolkit in terms of exports when they basically dismantled the National Energy Program and then locked all of those changes into the Canada-U.S. Free Trade Agreement and subsequently into NAFTA. So government effectively tied its hands in terms of tying our exports into projections of future needs within Canada. And as you probably are aware, the NAFTA agreement has a proportionality arrangement so that if we feel that there is an energy shortage down the road in Canada and want to restrict exports, we also have to restrict our own internal consumption to the same degree. It's a 3-year calculation that's made. So we, in effect, don't have much control in terms of shutting down or even restricting the tap as it is involved in terms of shipping oil south of the border. We've lost those policy tools, and that's, I think, quite unfortunate.
What about in terms of the kind of oil that we ship to the United States? Is it refined? Is it crude?
No, the part of the whole debate around, I think, the Keystone Pipeline is that this would be largely unrefined bitumen that would be going to the U.S., and the actual processing and refining would be done at refineries south of the border. Again, this implies an export of jobs, among other things. So in terms of thinking through the long-term benefits to Canada, this isn't necessarily the best approach to adopt.
How about on the hydroelectricity side, are we exporting, again, are we managing our exports well, or are we exporting down to the United States?
Well, on the hydroelectric side, we've had a number of changes, and it varies depending on which province one is looking at, because each province has its own electricity system. Most of the electricity production in Canada remains within the public sector, although Ontario did break up Ontario Hydro under the Harris government about 15 years ago. In terms of the new electricity that's being generated in some provinces, not all, you have an arbitrary reliance on more and more private production and restrictions, as we have here in BC, on the ability of our public Crown Corporation, BC Hydro, to engage in any new electricity generation. The other thing, though, that's happening is that the way in which the private sector is being expanded is through having provincial electricity utilities purchase private energy on the basis of very long-term contracts. And arguably, these are quite expensive. At the end of the contract, the ownership, unlike the past, which would end up in public hands when public utilities built these projects, the ownership remains private, which means we'll have to continue to pay for this energy indefinitely into the future. And much of it is very expensive. Certainly in BC, I think the average price now that we're paying is $124 a megawatt hour in new power purchases by BC Hydro. Very, very expensive electricity. As I said, we're not getting any assets at the end of this. We're essentially financing the privatization of our electricity system. That pattern is not identical in all provinces. One of the weaknesses of the BC system is that there isn't even an effort to try and generate value-added manufacturing here. Ontario has tried to do that by attaching certain conditions to the feed-in tariff arrangements that they put in place. Unfortunately for Ontario, as soon as they tried to do that, because of the trade agreements that we've entered into, in which we've restricted our ability to look at areas like value-added manufacturing, they now face trade challenges from Japan, the U.S., and the EU around this. But at least Ontario was trying to ensure that there would be more manufacturing of the inputs to renewable energy, and we've not really seen that in BC at all.
Well, what do we need in order to better manage our energy production here in Canada?
Well, we need some national leadership, and we need a national plan that really takes into account our long-term energy needs and also the reality of global warming, because this is truly a major, major crisis for everyone on the globe. And I think that at the national level, our government has its head in the sand on this issue. It's essentially denying that we need to deal with it, which I think is terribly unfortunate. So we need national leadership. We also need an integrated and comprehensive planning process, and that's what we don't have in terms of public planning here. And that's what needs to be done, and that planning should incorporate some of the ideas, for example, that the unions have in this sector for more value-added manufacturing, for a transition towards what they describe as a just transition in which employment and incomes will be sustained and hopefully improved somewhat in the sector. The planning will look at overall Canada's overall energy needs in the context of trying to address global warming in a way that greens our economy effectively.
Well, thanks so much, John, for illuminating this rather complex topic for us today.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
We've been speaking with John Calvert. He is a professor at Simon Fraser University and the co-author of the CCPA report, Climate Change and the Canadian Energy Sector. You can see the full report at policyalternatives.ca. And you are listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.